This is a major blow to a cornerstone of President Trump's agenda, and it could have the biggest impact on your wallet, though not quite yet. A federal appeals court striking down most of Trump's sweeping tariffs, finding that he overstepped his authority when implementing them. Now, this all comes down to exactly how Trump enacted those tariffs, by utilizing a rarely used law that gives the president special authority after a national emergency. The court essentially saying, though, that was illegal, writing instead that tariffs are a core congressional power. But this ruling won't come into effect until at least October, giving Trump plenty of time to appeal. And he's already indicated that he will do exactly that. Trump calling this decision, quote, a total disaster, and vowing to get it reversed by the Supreme Court.
Well, now, can you imagine how, you know, President Xi in China is hearing that, or President Putin is hearing that from Russia, that some lower court is stopping President Trump's ability to negotiate tariffs? Do you think that might have some effect on the negotiations? Do you think that people who don't understand our system might think, oh, see, he doesn't have support. Ha, 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 ha. We can laugh at him. We don't have to take him seriously. And so it's a very damning thing that that federal court judge did. And by the way, you're going to find out today, and I'll just tell, I'd hate to spoil the show, but you're going to find out today, there's nothing illegal about that. The president has every right. There's a statute. So that's just not, that's not even true. But federal court judges all over the country are doing this, and they're stopping so many important things, whether it's, you know, deporting immigrants who are here illegally, whether it's firing incompetent members or undermining people in positions of these various agencies in the government, whether it's, you know, firing employees who've been staying home and not even working for the last 3 or 4 years. The president doesn't have a right, even though he's an executive, the head of it. He's in charge of all those agencies. Well, we have a problem, Houston. We have a serious problem, and we're going to discuss that today about these judges, some of their recent decisions, why their decisions are laughable, ridiculous, lawless, how they're responding, how the Supreme Court is responding, all of that. I think you're going to find it interesting, and our guest is going to be Hans von Spakovsky, my good friend, who is from Heritage Foundation, and he is he's the host of a new podcast called Case in Point. Hans is kind of a, I would kind of describe him as an everyman or a jack of all trades when it comes to law and elections. He's just all over it. And I found out when I was talking to him after the show today, after we've already recorded the main body of the show, that he was a graduate of MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He graduated, is an engineering school, and he decided he didn't want to do law. And the thing of it is, then, I think that just applies now to his technician ability to parse and see how all these pieces fit together. It makes him really good. It makes sense to me that he went to MIT. Well, we're going to talk to him in just a second, but first, there are vast numbers of Americans who have not had a chance for life because their mothers have decided to terminate their lives, either in utero or with the abortion pill, whatever they're doing. And so, even if for no other reason, that shouldn't happen in America because we've promised everyone the right to life, and that includes our babies. So on this July, the celebrating the birth of our nation, we remember that, and we want to do everything we can to change it. Preborn is certainly doing that, and that's by showing moms the photos of their baby in utero, where they can see them sucking their thumb or moving around. It's just beautiful, and that's what happens, and it changes moms' minds. Most of them actually do change their mind when they see that. One ultrasound is $28, and we just hope and pray that you'll be generous and give your best amount to help stop taking the lives of unborn babies in this country. We need to do it right now. So lots of things, good things are happening. Let's add this to the list. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, you can call us. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040 and leave a message, some response, some thing of observation, something you didn't like, something you did like. We love hearing from you. So call 662-821-2040 and leave us a message about what you think about what you're hearing. Or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any of the social media platforms. And you can also find us at my website, which is sandyrios.com. I think that it's easier to listen to the podcast doing that. If you're not used to podcasting, sandyrios.com. However, if you're an AFR listener, you probably have already discovered, I hope, that you can go to afr.net, afr.net, and listen to the program, or you can go to any social media platform, Apple or Spotify or Amazon or any of those, and listen to Sandy Rios 24/7 anytime. Well, you can listen to it, by the way, 24/7. Wasn't that clever? Anyway, so there are lots of ways to listen, and I encourage you to do that. All right, well, now, if you want to find out what's going on with Alligator Alcatraz, with the lawfulness of the National Guard going to Chicago, tariffs, firing federal employees, and all the rest of it, you better stay tuned to my discussion with Hans von Spakovsky on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Here in the United States, a federal judge has temporarily halted the removal of Guatemalan children who entered the U.S. without an adult. The legal battle playing out as the 76 children were on planes in Texas, held on the tarmac for hours. Efren Olivares with the National Immigration Law Center is representing the children and says the government rushed them out of the shelters in the middle of the night.
What kind of country have we become that we go after orphan children and trying to deprive them of the most basic rights?
The Trump administration says they're acting on Guatemala's request to reunite the kids with their parents. During an emergency court hearing, a federal judge, sounding skeptical, says there are, quote, conflicting narratives from both sides, end quote, which leaves it unclear if the children could be harmed if they do return to Guatemala.
It sounds so high-minded. It sounds like judges really care about these kids, doesn't it? The full story is that so many of these kids, thousands of them, were brought over on purpose. It was sex trafficking, and they actually turned these kids over to people that had not been vetted. I don't say all of them, but many of them, most of them, were never vetted. It became, I remember Mayorkas said that they needed to speed up the process. It's amazing. This is a horrible story, and the judge is upset because we're sending them back to their families in Guatemala. So that's where we are with judges, and that's what we're going to talk about today. My good friend Hans von Spakovsky is with us. He's a senior fellow at Heritage. He's a former Federal Elections Commission, and he's also the manager of the Heritage Election Law Reform Initiative. I think, though, that Hans knows so much about the law, he's not really constrained to many things. And he's also host of a brand new podcast in which he discusses legal issues. It's called A Case in Point. And I would just highly recommend it. It's getting really great reviews, and Hans is... Well, Hans, good morning. I should not just talk about you. I should talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Sandy.
So are you a good interviewer, Hans?
Well, I hope so. I try to make it a very conversational podcast so that my guest, you know, one of the problems, as you well know, Sandy, and this is particularly true the remaining major networks, ABC, CBS, is often the so-called hosts, they spend all the time talking because they don't really want an answer from their guests.
I know, kind of like testifying before the Senate, right? Kind of like that. You know,
that's
it's
a
just
very good comparison.
You know, the other thing too, Hans, is I think there are so many gaps in the news we receive. We don't even realize what we don't get. Of course, we've known that for years, those of us in this business. It's not only that they tell us untruths, it's that they leave big things out. Like I was just noticing this week, Fox never mentioned the censure, at least not on their web page with articles. the censure of the congresswoman who tried to stop the ICE, actually charge this ICE officer and tried to restrain him.
Right.
And yeah, so right. And they did. They had to have him tell the story that Mike Johnson actually appointed, rather than Clay Higgins, who was the heir apparent to that committee, Homeland Security, and expected to have the chairmanship. He passed him over for a Republican from New York who was a liberal, very left. And he's the one who actually spearheaded sinking that censure. Okay, that's not what we're here to talk about. But I didn't hear that. I did not see that on Fox because I wanted to cover it on a different place. And that's a great example of an outlet that we mostly trust that's leaving out a huge story.
That is a big problem. You know, a lot of people talk about news hosts and others giving a slant on a story. But the biggest thing they do is, as you say, not cover a story. Because if you don't know about it, that is a way of covering up things that they don't want people to know about.
You know, that'll actually tie in to our discussion today, because we're going to talk about these judges, and it's Congress that really needs to rein them in, and we'll get to that. And, of course, they can't even manage to handle Homeland Security Committee. They're sabotaging the president, the things that he wants to do. It's just such weakness. It's weakness, and it's also just we've got a lot of Republicans that are on the other side. But maybe we'll get to that. Hans, let's talk about these out-of-control orders. And there are so many things to talk about with it. The latest one, of course, was those Guatemalan children. Let's start there. What's the issue? What happened in that case? You don't have to tell us everything, but just give us an idea of why this judge and who that judge was who stopped that sending them back to their homes.
Well, look, I cannot explain what the judge did other than pure politics, because based on the law, this judge should not have interfered. And you know what is so striking about this is that the judges, the prior Biden administration, were treating the situation of kids so different from domestic law. You know, one of these situations where aliens are being treated better than citizens. And let me give you a quick example of what I mean. In the U.S., Sandy, you know, if parents, if they abandon a child, those parents are criminally charged, right? That is a violation of state law. And yet, throughout the Biden administration, you had unaccompanied children being paid by their illegally present parents. Their parents, many of them were already in the U.S. They were paying criminals, dangerous drug cartels, to smuggle their children across the border. And then what would the Biden administration do if they picked up these children? Reunite them with their parents instead of doing what should have been done, which is, one, criminally charging the parents for having abandoned their children, plus handed them over to criminal cartels, and handed the kids over, returned them to their countries along with the parents once they'd been charged, returning these kids to who? The equivalent of our social services departments. What happens with abandoned kids in our country, right? They are handed over to the social services agencies of each state, where they are then taken care of. That's what should have happened with these kids. They should have been returned, for example, to Mexico. Mexico has the same equivalent, same kind of social services agencies. They should have been handed over to them, but instead they did not do that. This case is all about unaccompanied children who came here, were handed over willy-nilly to all kinds of supposed individuals who would take care of them without any kind of background checks being done. Many of them were lost in the system, so we didn't even know where they were. And these were actually kids whose parents are still in their home countries, and we are simply going to reunite these minors with their parents. And you have a judge stepping in and stopping family reunification. If the Trump administration was stopping family reunification, the headlines would be screaming at the New York Times and elsewhere.
You know, I don't know. One nut of this that I don't understand, well, I think I do understand it, but correct me if I'm wrong, Hans. People who are not U.S. citizens, especially illegal immigrants, do not have, I don't think, constitutional rights. Do they have constitutional rights? The first I heard about this is when Obama used to bring terrorists over here and try them in our civil courts and give them Americans, constitutional rights. What's constitutional here and is not?
Well, here's the way to understand this. Look, if you're being criminally prosecuted, it doesn't matter whether you're a citizen or an alien. Yeah, you're entitled to basic constitutional due process rights. But immigration proceedings are not criminal prosecutions. And no, you are not entitled to constitutional due process rights in an immigration proceeding. That's why, if you think about this, you'll suddenly realize this makes sense. When an ICE agent, when they detain and pick up an illegal alien, they don't have to read them their Miranda rights because they're not being criminally prosecuted. And the Supreme Court more than 100 years ago said immigration proceedings are civil proceedings. They're not criminal prosecutions. Therefore, you don't have to read them their Miranda rights. They're not entitled to a lawyer paid for by the government. They're not entitled to a jury trial. You know, all the things that we take for granted. If we are being prosecuted criminally by the government, they don't get that.
Well, I think they in purpose don't get it. And so we have had our law stretched so much, and we've had so much lawlessness.
Yes.
And the judges are leading the way right now, it seems to me, Hans. And let's just give them, let me just mention a few, and you can, maybe the one that you want to talk about, you could talk about. I just was scattershotting these. We've got the Federal Reserve, the firing of the woman at the Federal Reserve who is one of the governors and has all these homes. She's done illegal transactions with real estate. Federal employees, you know, being laid off. Remember, they tried to stop that, letting them, whatever, the variations of what Trump was doing on that. The National Guard being sent to cities in order to help fight crime. Alligator Alcatraz stopped dead and cold and forced to stop reconstruction and all of that. There's an update on that. But so that's just a few that I could think of. In fact, do you know how many there have been, Hans? I know that's not a fair question, but do you have an idea or just kind of an idea?
Oh, there have been dozens and dozens of injunctions issued against the president in so many cases. But you know, what's interesting about that is many of those district court judge opinions have been overturned, not only in the courts of appeal, but by the U.S. Supreme Court constantly issuing stays, suspending those injunctions. And in fact, I don't know if you saw this, there was recently an article, I think at Fox News, by these district court judges anonymously complaining about the Supreme Court staying their opinions.
I did.
Like, what? They're complaining because a higher court says that what they're doing is wrong?
Yeah, let me get specific. It was actually NBC. I was going to ask you about this. There's a piece that says, I'm reading from this, a dozen unnamed federal judges slammed the Supreme Court for overturning lower court decisions related to Trump administration without enough explanation why. And then it goes on to say, with tensions so high, four of the judges said they believe the Supreme Court, and specifically Roberts, should do more to defend the courts. One judge complained Supreme Court justices don't have our backs. Another said SCOTUS decisions in favor of the administration help the president undermine the lower courts and leaves judges feeling thrown under the bus. Okay,
well,
so why
should,
is that wrong?
They should feel that way because they are the ones who are issuing rulings totally outside of the law. They all seem to think there are many presidents who can substitute their judgment for that of the president. And the judge in this latest case we were just talking about, Guatemala, her name is Sparkle Sukanon. No, really, Sparkle Sukanon. She was appointed, as I'm sure you would guess, by Joe Biden. And she is one of the many left-wing ideologues, unfortunately, put into the federal courts who are waging a judicial war against the administration. Look, what's basically going on is they lost the election. And so they believe it is their job, folks like Sukanon, they believe it's their job to use the courts to wage a political war against the policies of the president, completely divorced from the law and their legal authority to act.
You know, yes, and I want to talk about that, but I want to mention something that you just kind of hinted at, and that is one of the one judge is named Zia Faruqi. Another one's named has a very Muslim name. I can't find it. But here's a U.S. magistrate, Judge Moxilla Abadhyaya. Now, Hans, I find myself wondering, you remember when Obama appointed, I don't know, I want to say 100, something like that, really far-left attorneys for Justice Department? This just seems kindred to that. Like, we've got people who really... My point of view is that they don't really love this country. They're ignoring the law and they're wreaking havoc. And so we're kind of living the results of Biden and Obama appointing lawless judges, and many of them, I don't think, have a heart for this country. That's my opinion. I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
Oh, look, I agree. And I think that is a very dangerous problem for us that you've had judges like this appointed and now have all this power in the courts. I give another quick example of this, of how lawless they are. You may have seen that just a couple of days ago, a federal judge out in California, and then this was upheld by a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Secretary Noem had ended what's called TPS, temporary protected status, right? You know, there's a statute out there that allows the president, through the Secretary of Homeland Security, to give temporary legal status to folks from a particular country if, for example, and remember we did this, remember when a hurricane hit Haiti, right? We gave temporary legal status to Haitians who fled the island because of the hurricane. If you look at that statute, whether or not to grant that is totally up to the executive branch. You know, the president and the Secretary of Homeland, they are the ones who have total discretion to decide whether to grant it and total discretion when to end it. Well, not only do they have total discretion, but the statute says no federal court shall have jurisdiction or question the decisions of the president and the Secretary of Homeland Security. So federal courts are basically by federal law told that you've got no authority to do anything about this. And yet, what did we just see? These federal courts out there telling no, you can't end temporary protected status. That's the kind of lawlessness we're seeing in the federal courts.
Yeah, well, let me mention another one. I mentioned that Zia Faruqi. He's actually a federal magistrate judge, and he said in his courtroom over a case that I'll mention in a second, the Department of Justice is past that point of losing credibility and playing cops and robbers like children. That's what he says. And it was over an arrest in D.C., I think. Yeah, it has to be because of Judge Jeanine. A guy named Edward Dana, career criminal, 9 convictions, 23 arrests. He was in the middle of another violent crime. He told the police he wanted to kill the president. Jeanine Pirot charged him with threats against the president. And this guy, this judge, Zia Faruqi, let him off. He's off. And of course, then all the time he's making these comments against the president, against the Justice Department. I think the Supreme Court is getting a little fed up with this, don't you?
Oh yeah, I think they are. They've been busier this summer than they've ever been that I can recall, staying and stopping a lot of these lower court decisions. And I suspect that at some point in the future, in one of these cases, we're going to see a very harsh opinion coming down, going after what's been happening in the court.
I have a quote here from...
I hope so. Anyway.
I hope so, too. Neil Gorsuch wrote this, I guess, recently. He said, so this is now the third time in a matter of weeks this court has had to intercede in a case squarely controlled by one of its precedents. It's probably what you're talking about. He wrote this on August the 21st. He said, all these interventions should have been unnecessary, but together they underscore a basic tenet of our judicial system. Whatever their own views, judges are duty-bound to respect the hierarchy of the federal court system created by the Constitution and Congress. Lower court judges may sometimes disagree with this court's decision, but they are never free to defy them. Hans, you know, I love history. You know that. We talk about history a lot because you love it, too. I can't remember, not that I know everything because I don't, when judges in the past, lower court judges, did such lawless things or, you know, tried to counter the executive in this way. Even their opinions often are just nonsense. They don't even make sense. Do you remember any, and again, I'm asking a question I didn't prepare you for, but do you know of any case in our history where judges were behaving this way?
No. No, and there's a reason for that. If you look at their experience, their backgrounds, their statements, particularly on social media, you will see that the judges, starting with Barack Obama, but accelerating with Joe Biden, the judges that they appointed are the most partisan, left-wing ideologues who have ever sat on the federal bench in our entire history. And you can see it in the decisions they write, the things they are doing, and they're quite frankly refusal to follow precedents, as Judge Gorsuch just talked about. I mean, their view is, I'm going to do what I can in my courtroom to stop Donald Trump, even if I have no basis for doing it. And yeah, maybe I'll get overturned, but maybe I won't. And if I do get overturned, it'll be a while before it happens, so I can temporarily stop the administration. That's what's happening in these federal courts, and that includes in the courtroom of folks like Judge Sukunanan, the woman who just said, no, you can't return kids to their parents in the Guatemalan case. Can you imagine how angry the U.S. government would be if there were kids, let's say kids who had gone to Europe on their own, and they had been picked up in Germany or France or England, and we had asked that they be returned to their parents in the United States, and the judges there said, no, we're not going to allow that to happen.
And we're going to take them off the plane and make them stay. I mean, it's just like Boasberg stopping the plane with that. I want to get to Boasberg in just a second, by the way. But that was when this first started happening. Boasberg, and the Chief Justice of the D.C. Circuit, was the cog in the wheels, and he keeps doing that. And I want to talk about him in just a second. But you, I think people would really like to know, but since it's so relevant right now, the National Guard is being sent. They were sent to D.C., and I think mostly all of us understand that the District of Columbia is a different thing. It's not a state. It's under the jurisdiction of Congress and the executive, and so president has a right to send in National Guard. But how about Chicago? What's the law on that?
Well, the National Guard under federal law is normally under the control of the governor of a state. However, there is a federal statute that allows the National Guard to be basically federalized and taken over by the president under certain conditions. And one of them is if the president is, and this is a quote from the statute, unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. You'll recall that's exactly what happened in Los Angeles, right? We sent in ICE and other federal agents to enforce federal immigration law, and they were attacked. They were attacked by mobs going after the agents, destroying federal property, preventing them from enforcing the law. And you'll recall that the local police chief made a public statement, for which apparently got in big trouble with the mayor, saying, we can't cope with this. We don't have the resources to protect federal law enforcement agents. So those are the circumstances under which federal troops can be sent in by the president. You may have seen the video recently of the same thing going on in, I think it was Portland. An ICE facility was being attacked by local mobs.
Yes.
And it wasn't just local police unable to cope with it. You had local officials saying, we are not going to stop this.
Yeah.
We support the attackers. So those are the circumstances under which the president can do this. I suspect what they're going to do is they're going to send in a surge of federal law enforcement agents, ICE, FBI, et cetera, to start enforcing federal immigration laws in places like Chicago to pick up illegal aliens. And when they start getting attacked, when those agents start getting attacked by organized mobs, and the Chicago police stand down, because they're ordered to stand down by the mayor, that's the point at which the president will be able to bring in the National Guard to protect those federal agents.
You know, it reminds me, the first time this ever happened, to my knowledge, was in Alabama, when they would not let black children go to school. And Governor Wallace went to the school, and the National Guard came in, and they Governor
right.
Wallace and the local authorities had to stand down. Same statute, I'm guessing. So, okay, that helps.
It is.
Yeah, that helps. Now, there's another one I don't quite get, and this was huge. This is huge for all. Look, they make this about Trump and the courts, but this is about our country. I want to make that clear. These actions, these lawless actions and orders and stopping are hurting our country. They're hurting our future. They don't care about our country. They don't care about it, and we should be very angry. It's not just about President Trump, and I think he'd be the first to say that. But President Trump has said so much good fortune with the tariffs, and it's been our good fortune because we are in so much debt. It's bringing in trillions, I think, at this point, of dollars. And so suddenly a judge, last week, said he doesn't have the right. to invoke these tariffs. What's the law on that, Hans?
I actually think the judge isn't wrong on that, too, because, in fact, there are all these federal statutes on tariffs, and, in fact, they give the president extraordinary power to determine what those tariffs should be. And again, I just think it's what's happening in all of these cases is these judges are stepping in, and they are substituting their judgment for that of the president. You know, the president, for example, in some of these cases, has said the trade deficit, the huge trade deficit, is an economic emergency. And I think there's a lot of economists that would agree with that. And under, for example, one of the statutes, if there's an economic emergency, the president is given full power to impose tariffs as needed, and yet you have a judge saying, oh, well, you may think that's a problem, the huge trade deficit, but I, federal judge, I don't think it's a problem, so I'm going to say you can't do that. That makes no sense whatsoever, because it's the president who is tasked under the Constitution and under the statutes to make those kind of decisions, not some single federal judge somewhere.
It's interesting that so many of them are calling President Trump a dictator, a king. I have kind of a list of them that say these kinds of things, and they are actually taking the role of king. They think they're little kings, little dominions, that they
right.
can actually make law, really, is what it is, for the whole country. It's amazing, and it's amazing that nobody's really stopping them. there have been some wins, and let's talk about those before we talk. I'm dreading Boasberg. I can't stand what he's doing, and we'll get to that. But there have been some wins, like Alligator Alcatraz has just been the state again. That judge's decision that because of our environmental reasons in the Everglades, you can't possibly build that. It will help. It'll hurt the natural order, whatever she said. That's been overturned, and it's been stayed. So they're proceeding with Alligator Alcatraz. I think that just happened. So, but there have been some other wins, right, in the courts for the president?
Well, there have been, there have been huge wins in a very significant area, and that is that, as you know, when the president came in, he organized a executive department, DOGE, to come up with recommendations, and they recommended terminating the gigantic, huge federal staff by making cuts throughout the government in various agencies. And there were multiple lawsuits filed, particularly by public sector unions, to say the president could not terminate, could not fire, could not reduce in force a single employee at any federal agency. You had district court judges, again, these rogue judges, agreeing and saying, yep, Mr. President can't do that. Every one of those decisions has been stopped or overturned either by a court of appeals or by the U.S. Supreme Court. So the reductions in federal staff is ongoing and has occurred at multiple agencies, which is a very good thing. So far, the termination of USAID, the stopping of sending out foreign aid to all these ridiculous and frankly dangerous places all around the world, that's been upheld in the courts. That's also has continued to happen. So those are all big wins for the president.
Yeah, and that's good news. And I don't think, well, I guess a lot of these are not settled, but it seems like, from my perspective, he's winning almost everything. Do you see it that way? I mean, there are some things still held up.
I think overall he's being successful. Yeah, it's one of these situations where he keeps getting stopped initially in the lower courts, but this Justice Department has probably filed more emergency appeals than any prior Justice Department anywhere, and they're being very successful in getting higher courts to overturn what these bad judges have been doing.
One point,
and then, by the way, that includes the guy you want to talk about, Judge Boasberg, who just got. He got slapped down in a way I haven't seen in quite a while by an appeals court panel in Washington, D.C.
Really? I don't know about this.
Oh, yeah. Despite the fact, remember, what was before Boasberg was the Alien Enemies Act, right? And the fact that the president was using that to get rid of all of these gang members of TDA, which is basically this Venezuelan gang. Boasberg was the one that, the planes were in the air.
Yes,
taking these gang members out of the country, and he was saying, you got to turn the plane around and bring them back. On an emergency appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, Supreme Court said to Boasberg, you never had jurisdiction over this case. You're in Washington, D.C., These gang members had been detained where? Down in Texas. And if they want to contest what's going on, they had to file in federal court in Texas. So in essence, Supreme Court said to Boasberg, you never had authority to even hear the case. You certainly had no authority to issue any orders, right? Well, Boasberg should have immediately dismissed the case. But you know what he did? He said, well, yeah, that may be, but while I had the case, the government should have listened to my orders and done what I said. So you know what? I'm going to hold members of the U.S. Justice Department in criminal contempt for not obeying my orders, even if the Supreme Court later said You didn't have any jurisdiction. Anyway, well, just recently, a three-judge panel threw out Boasberg's criminal contempt case, and the language they used against him was extremely harsh, basically saying that, here's a great quote from Judge Rao. "This case is highly unusual, and I have found no other like it, perhaps because no district court has threatened criminal contempt against executive branch officials as a backdoor to coercing compliance with an order that's been vacated by the Supreme Court." So he really got slapped down by the appeals court in that case, which he should have. He's got to be one of the worst federal judges in the entire country.
Absolutely. And that, but he, you know, the thing of it is, Hans, these guys don't seem to have any shame and they don't seem to care. I think of the judge in the Trump courtroom, was the case over the porn star. I can't remember the judge's name. But he had no shame, no matter what happened. He's doing all of these ridiculous things. So we laugh about it, but it's hard to stop them because they are hell-bent on destroying. I don't know what else to say. I've got, here's a case that just happened with Boasberg. I'm sure you know about this. I know you do. It was a 40-year-old woman who threatened President Trump's life, Natalie Rose Jones.
Right.
And basically, she wrote, "I am willing," she put this on Instagram, or I'm not sure what the other platform was, but, "I am willing to sacrificially kill this POTUS by disemboweling him and cutting out his trachea with Liz Cheney and all the affirmation present." And that's just one thing she said. So they arrest her. The Secret Service interviews her, and she doubles down. "Yes, I want to kill him, and I'm going to use a knife to do it." So I think it's, who brought charges against her? Somebody did. And so, well, Boasberg let her go.
U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Bottom line is, it went down a chain of different events. We don't have to talk about all of it. But Justice James Boasberg just released her and told her to go to a psychiatrist in New York City. That was his charge to her. So how likely you think she's to do that?
And no bail. No bail whatsoever. He just lets her go.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, at least he's consistent. He wants people who want to kill the president and gang members of one of the most dangerous cartels in the world roaming the streets where they can kill Americans. I mean, at least he's consistent in that, right?
Yeah, he is. And there's more things he's done. I want to go back in time for a minute, but I want to just say that Pam Bondi, Attorney General Pam Bondi, has filed a misconduct complaint against him. But I don't know, if the Congress won't do anything, because they're really the ones tasked with reining in these judges, right?
They are. They're the ones that have put together the ethics code that, one, governs judges like Boasberg. And look, the only way he can be removed from office is through impeachment. And by the way, I don't know if you ever saw this, but talk about inappropriate behavior. You know, he was apparently so interested in the impeachment of Donald Trump that he attended, as a member of the audience, one of the impeachment trials going on.
Well, it's interesting to track Boasberg's history, Hans, and I know you know a lot about it, but he was appointed by Obama. I thought he was appointed to the circuit, but George W. Bush actually appointed him first, and he was confirmed by, 100 senators, which, as an aside, shows you how important those confirmations are and shows you how the Senate is not really doing their job. They're not doing their job.
Well, that's true. And one of the other problems in places like the District of Columbia, for example, which is a 95-96% Democratic district, is, they have what they call a blue slip process in the Senate, right? Senators have the ability to block nominations of particular judges, folks from for positions in their states. And what you've had often happens in blue states is even a Republican president, in order to get the approval support of the Democratic senators, will often nominate, you know, not a real conservative, but somebody that the Democratic senators also like. And so you may have somebody who's appointed, for example, by George H.W. Bush, but the idea that they're actually a conservative, just not always the case.
Mostly not the case. Some of our worst judges, justices, have been appointed by Republicans. So here's a few other things about Boasberg that really people, I think, need to know this. He was appointed to be part of the FISA court, the famous FISA court that was so wickedly went along with and used to go after President Trump and his supposed connection with Russia. And so here's Boasberg. He actually ends up overseeing it. I think he becomes the head of the FISA court during those terrible years. So that says something. And then guess what? He was appointed to oversee the FISA court reforms after they did the investigation and found out the FBI had done all these things and presented false evidence. He's put in charge of overseeing the FISA court reforms. How crazy is that, Hans?
Well, but particularly because he was there when they were falsely issuing unjustified electronic surveillance warrants against the Trump campaign based on totally false information, based on a hoax.
Yeah, he was overseeing it. And then he's charged with implementing the reforms. And here we go. Chief Justice Roberts is the one who put him in that position. And as I understand it, they're really close buddies. Do I remember that correctly?
I don't know about that, but I know that if I were the Chief Justice, I would not be a close buddy with him because I think he's been acting, quite frankly, in what I consider to be an unethical way in many of these cases, and that's one of the reasons why an ethics complaint has been filed against him.
Yeah, I think they were at each other's wedding, as I recall. I'm sorry, I'm trying to find it because I remember this from the past. So what's he doing appointing him to that? And he knows what that FISA court has done. Of course, he could have put a stop to it, and he didn't, did he? Don't you think Roberts, he knew what was going on in part? You'd have to be blind not to understand. We also have the Boasberg was the judge that there's Kevin Kleinsmith, who was an attorney with the FBI, and they had a report that he altered and submitted to the FISA court. It was very crucial. He changed crucial information, and Boasberg gave him probation.
Yeah. Right, and he got his bar license back, by the way. This lawyer who lied on the one of the surveillance applications for a warrant, he's already got his license back from the District of Columbia Bar Association. They, you know, if you do something against Trump, they don't really consider that to be very serious.
Wow. Well, that's part of our problem. We have such a wicked center of government. The District of Columbia is just run by wicked people. It's populated. Not all of them are great people there. I don't mean to make a blanket statement like that. But people in power. You know, I was always, when I was living there, I always felt like I was going into an enemy country just parking. You know, it's like you know they're coming after your car. And so it's...
I call it after a very famous Joseph Conrad book, The Heart of Darkness of America.
That's true. It really is true. Well, so what if President Trump is, circling the wagons in Chicago, I think, and he's had great success in D.C., but of course you find yourself wondering, how long can this last? I mean, they can't stay there forever. So what is the next step with that stuff, you think?
No, it's not. But, you know, there's already, for example, in the District of Columbia, you know, he had 30 days under the statute to have the National Guard there. They've already announced that what they did, remember, is both the National Guard and taking over the direction of the Metropolitan Police Department. It's been so successful that the mayor apparently has negotiated an agreement in which she said she has directed the Metropolitan Police Department to continue to cooperate and work with federal authorities. The total opposite of, wow. of the attitude before, the total opposite of the attitude of officials in places like Chicago. So that will continue to make a big difference in the District of Columbia. And hopefully, in the meantime, with an increased federal law enforcement presence, they can work on their biggest problem, which is police officers have fled the city. They are something like 800 or 900 officers short of what they need in the District of Columbia to actually have effective law enforcement here.
Well, you know, Chicago is our hometown, and a lot of policemen have also left the force there because Chicago police used to be the best. They kept control of that city. And I remember, Hans, I was just mentioning this on air recently. We used to have a 3rd of July celebration on Lake Michigan, and there were hundreds of thousands of people there. Beautiful fireworks, just a whole festival. And there was hardly any crime. The police were there, and people just respected it. Even downtown was always safe. You could go and walk around even in the early morning hours. I remember doing that many, many times. It was a safe place. And, of course, there were parts of the city that weren't, but downtown was great. So I don't know. I think in Chicago there are so many. I started radio there, and I had a my listeners are going to get tired of me saying this, but I had a very large minority audience. I had all kinds of people listening from every, you know, the south side, the north side, the west side. And we had great discussions. And I'm telling you, they even back then, Hans, I got calls from black women who were so upset about their children not being safe, being killed, being, you know, co-opted by the gangs, losing their children. And so I have a feeling that if this mayor and the governor, who are, they're both crazy, if they continue on this, I have a feeling there may be a huge change and tide in the black communities. I really do. I think that's very possible. But we're off track a little bit here. All right, so the last thing. I've asked you before, but I'm asking you the same question again. What can we do? I mean, isn't there something we can do to stop these lawless judges? Can't someone do something? What can the Supreme Court do about it?
Well, the Supreme Court needs to issue some, like I said, a very harsh opinion in which they put in very strict guidelines. And frankly, they need to go after judges who don't abide by those guidelines. Now, the other thing that Congress could do, and there have been proposals, including by Senator Mike Lee and others, is to pass a statute that would change the authority of the federal court so that, remember, what's happening here is lone federal judges, and almost all of these cases are being filed in a small handful of places across the United States, Massachusetts, Maryland, California, where the left and progressives know they can get these very liberal judges. The proposals that have been that have been put into bills, which haven't made it through Congress yet, would be bills that would say that if the president, and particularly an executive order, is being sued, no lone federal judge would get the case. It would have to be a three-judge panel, and also that any appeal would be direct to the U.S. Supreme Court. That would, one, prevent lone federal judges from being able to do this, and second, it would cut down on the amount of time involved in a president, for example, getting a bad decision overturned because you'd skip the courts of appeal, you go straight to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court would have to take such a case, no choice. They would have to take it and make a decision on it. Is that a complete remedy? No. But that would be a much better situation than the one we have now.
Absolutely. Well, we're trying to get control of all these other... I'm giving up on Congress for the most part. There's some great men there, but I'm really disappointed with the House of Representatives right now, and the Senate, for heaven's sake. I thought they were all better than they used to be, and maybe they are to some degree, but not much. We can't really depend on them to do things, to do the hard things. But and the president is cleaning up the agencies. He's cleaning up immigration, all of these things, changing so many things, our finances. But he can't touch the judiciary, and he can't touch the Congress, not really. So I think that's where we the people come in. And I think I said this yesterday, we all need to step up and do our part to help President Trump finish this task. He can't do all of this alone. It's going to take us. That means running for office, supporting good people, paying attention. When there's a judicial hearing on judges, pay attention and weigh in. So right. That's just a general instruction. Well, Hans, it's always great to talk to you. I really do appreciate your time. And again, remember that his podcast is called Case in Point, Case in Point. And he's a senior fellow at Heritage and a bunch of other things. And so, and an expert, and always engaging and fun to talk to. So, Hans, thank you for joining me. Hans von Spakovsky, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe v. Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime. And that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Florida Attorney General James Uffmeyer calling the move a win for the state and President Trump's agenda. Uffmeyer posting this on X, saying that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has blocked a recent order by Judge Kathleen Williams to close the facility in part over environmental impact concerns. This all comes as a federal judge recently ordered the state to cease operations at Alligator Alcatraz within 60 days. But Florida officials argued dismantling the facility would cost taxpayers $15 to $20 million and cripple their ability to handle what Governor Ron DeSantis has called an immigration crisis of unprecedented magnitude. The court agreed, warning that without the site, the state system could be pushed, quote, to a breaking point. Governor DeSantis reacting following that news.
We said the mission would continue, and I'm pleased to say that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has just stayed that ruling and stayed the case. So Alligator Alcatraz is, in fact, like we've always said, open for business. The mission continues, and we're going to continue leading the way when it comes to immigration enforcement.
Meanwhile, environmental groups and the Miccosukee tribe continue to argue the facility threatens sensitive wetlands. But for now, the injunction is paused, meaning Alligator Alcatraz stays open while the case plays out.
Well, I just want to say, first of all, in a selfish way, I'm so glad I live in Florida now. I'm really glad. And I love Ron DeSantis, and I'm going to miss him so much when he leaves. He's fought this tooth and toenail. But back to what it means to us. Alligator Alcatraz is a facility that was already in place. They've just refurbished and made it better, cleaned it up. It's actually, if you're a prisoner, it's a nice place to stay, kind of. It's better than a lot of jails. It's not for criminals in the terms of our American criminals. It is for people in this country who are being deported. What's happening is the ICE agents are catching people quickly, left and right, and they've run out of places to put them before they can be deported to their countries. And that's what Alligator Alcatraz was for. And let me repeat, that's not about President Trump. It's not it's going to hurt his feelings or hurt him from being reelected or hurt him in some way. It hurts us. We have to get the probably 30 million, I'm guessing, I'm telling you, 30 million illegal immigrants who are in this country at this time, taking jobs, sucking up resources, fraudulently, you know, taking Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, you know, taking up housing, overloading our goods and services, our public utilities. That's what they don't have a right to be here. Look, I see illegal immigrants. I don't know if people are illegal, but before the crackdown, many of them work in our neighborhoods and around and probably have been in my home. And I think personally, God would have us to be kind and respectful to them. If you have a chance to talk to them, you need to tell them that they need to do what's right. But the government's different. This comes under Romans 13, where the powers that be, God allows, he puts them in place, the governors, the presidents, the kings, all of the authorities are not allowed. God allows them. And they are there to create order in the society. We as Christians aren't. That's not our task. The church is not. We are to reach people's hearts with the gospel. So our marching orders are different than government. Government has to make order. We have to respect our borders. We have to respect our laws. And like Mike Bruce carried a gun, and he had to use it sometimes because he was bringing order. He was important. He's a law enforcement officer. He was with the FBI that God ordained to do that. So keep in mind that the government's not cruel for them to do that. These people have to get out. They don't belong here. They don't have a right because everything that they take from your family and your children's future. Okay, so I just to lay the groundwork on that. So Alligator Alcatraz is back in business, and so I'm really glad about that. And I'm glad that these lower court judges are not winning these cases. Now, some of them, they have made it really hard. Can you imagine the expense and the time and the money and treasure to try to fight back on these challenges? And they'd come like they're in waves, and they're just ridiculous. It has to stop. It has to stop. And I want to beg you right now, honestly, I am so fed up with Congress. So many good men, like I think of Clay Higgins, who I just love. Clay was an award-winning, hard-charging policeman in Louisiana before he ran for Congress. And he ran the Homeland Security Committee. He was the Democrats ran it, but he was the ranking Republican. And he did great things. You probably saw him in some of these interactions. I remember him interviewing Christopher Wray. And he said at the end of it, because Christopher Wray was very arrogant and non-cooperative. And so Clay Higgins said, "Mr. Wray, your time's a-coming." I'll never forget him saying that. So he was in line to be the next chairman when the Republicans took over, because they're the majority now. He would have been the chairman of that committee. And Mike Johnson? Oh, no. We're going to give it to Andrew Gabarino, congressman from New York, who has voted in terrible ways. He would be so upset if I don't have it in front of me. I could tell you. And so he stops this censure of this black congresswoman who charged an ICE agent in New Jersey. Now, she's still under indictment, and she's still probably going to have to go through the system, but she should have been censured, and she's still on the Homeland Security Committee. And that was Mike Johnson's responsible for that. And I'm disgusted with him right now, to be honest. Yeah, maybe he's the best we can get, but he should never have done that. That was wrong. And so I implore you, President Trump is doing so many good things. Please don't sit back on your heels, rest on your laurels. Make sure that you are actively involved still in electing good people, because this could all go in a flash. And is that what you want? I think it's worth fighting for, and I think we've gained so much ground in terms of what's right and wrong that we don't want to do that. So stay strong and don't give up the fight, okay? And don't leave President Trump out there by himself and all those good guys who are fighting for us. Well, I'm done with my preaching. This is Sandy Rios, and I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.